T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You read around the league and is definitely new for everybody, so you want to try to give Major League Baseball a little bit of slack in some areas, because we're all kind of needing some slack in some areas. But I think the protocols they have in place are for a reason, and we need to get these tests done. We need to get these tests back, these results back, so everybody feels safe to come to work and create that safe environment. And I've voiced my opinion to Major League Baseball, and they assured me that they're working as diligently as they can, and understand they're falling short in some areas, but they've assured me that they're cleaning things up.
Mm-hmm. Sure they are. They've got top men on it. Top men. That's David Ross, the skipper of the Chicago Cubs, and says there's some hiccups and cut him some slack, and no, I'm not going to do that. When it comes to something like testing for a potentially deadly virus, you don't get slack on that. I'm sorry. Here to talk about that and more is Craig Calcaterra, who is the lead baseball writer for NBC Sports. You find him on Twitter at Craig Calcaterra. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing better than Major League Baseball is right now. Let's just put it that way.
And you're driving a Subaru Impreza, which is impressive.
At least for the next hour or so, my loaner is sitting in the garage, and I'm going to go drive it irresponsibly for a while until I have to take it back.
Yeah, pretty sweet. This is, I think MLB's response yesterday made me even angrier than when we started the show yesterday, and we were seeing on Twitter that all of these teams, like Oakland and Houston and St. Louis, are saying, yeah, we can't play because we don't have test results. And then for MLB to come out puffy-chested and say, yeah, fine, we kind of maybe screwed that up, but look how awesome this job is that we're doing. And I'm just thinking, you know, read the room sometimes. It's just more tone deafness from Rob Manfred, not understanding how important it is to make sure his players stay healthy.
Yeah, and you hit it right. It's tone deafness. It's just absolutely incredible to me. Not that they screwed up. I mean, look, this is hard. Like David Ross said, you know, they're going to be screw ups. This is uncharted territory for everybody. But when you make a mistake, take some ownership over it, or assure people that, hey, this is not going to happen again. And Manfred's statement, it didn't come from Manfred. I get all the press releases from Major League Baseball, and when he wants to say something, he puts his name on it. And when he doesn't, it's a statement from Major League Baseball. This one did not have his name on it, but it's petulant, like Rob Manfred is. And, you know, the comment was, well, you know, we've got 95% done, and we're almost great. But, the two issues were, or the one issue was, it was the 4th of July weekend and they couldn't get the test shipped because of a holiday. Like, they didn't know the 4th of July was coming up. If you went to your boss, if you had an important shipment to make at work, if you're a lawyer, for example, and you had to get a filing in and it didn't get in, and you said, well, you know, the holiday weekend, the mail didn't work, so it sat there, you'd be fired or you'd be in big trouble. That's not an excuse. Everyone knows you make arrangements for that. Major League Baseball didn't do it. You could at least own up. Major League Baseball called it unforeseen. I don't know. Last time 4th of July snuck up on me was never.
I don't know about you, but I have been having these moments every day as I doom scroll through my social media feed of getting excited and interested in baseball at the level that feels somewhat normal, and then feeling the dark clouds encroach and think, what the hell are we doing? What are we doing and why are we doing it? And I go wildly from one direction to the other of pretending it's kind of all okay and then realizing it's definitely not all okay. And when I start seeing now that we've got these ICUs at capacity in multiple Florida counties and increasingly across Texas and Arizona, and we've got personal protective equipment again being rationed and difficulty in getting tests turned around, is it even proper for baseball to now be looking for another lab and expanding their testing protocols in that regard?
Well, you know, first of all, I'll say that we have always said that baseball reflects society and society reflects baseball. That's one of the things we love about it all. And that whole cognitive dissonance you described there of feeling great and feeling horrible is kind of what all of society, at least American society, has felt since March. You know, I mean, it's horrible. Everything's closed. Everything sucks. We're isolated. People are sick. But at the same time, how excited were you the first time you could get a beer somewhere, even if it was like outside and safe? I mean, you want the normalcy. We want baseball back. We want to be able to watch a game. But yeah, it's very difficult to sort of swing back and forth between those feelings. You know, my view of the world is sort of lines up with what Nationals closer Sean Doolittle said the other day was, you know, sports are a reward for a functioning society. You know, when we lived in, you know, hunting gathering societies, we didn't have time for sports, right? It's a luxury you get when you have luxury time and you have the ability to do something. America has, I know people hate it when I say this, but we have basically failed to deal with the pandemic. Compared to every other Western country, compared to every other industrialized country, we have basically failed in our response, certainly comparatively speaking. There is no rule or law written on stone on the side of a mountain that says you get to have professional sports no matter what. I think that because we have screwed up so badly, some of the things have to go by the wayside, and I can't see how we can responsibly have professional spectator sports right now given the circumstances that are currently prevailing.
Well, we've punted on it, and we've just sort of decided that now it's time to be okay with thousands and thousands of new cases and hospitalizations and concurrent deaths per day, that's just sort of what we're now supposed to expect, rather than we're not even hearing people talk about flatten the curve anymore. And for me, it's a matter of time as to when baseball realizes they can't do this. And I'm not sure how it looks. I'm not sure in my multiple scenarios here as I sort of play this out. Is it one team that's unable to reasonably compete, or is it just enough teams that are affected enough? Or in the scariest possibility, is it going to take somebody on the periphery, some immunocompromised family member or associate dying because of a contact with baseball? I don't know how ultimately the message is sent that we can't do this anymore.
Well, I mean, it's a scary question to even contemplate about, you know, what does horrible failure look like in this scenario?
But that's how my brain works. I have no choice. I can't escape that.
Oh, we all have to. First of all, I think you're right in that, you know, sort of nationally, we've just sort of decided this is over. I think that the messaging from the White House the other day was something like along the lines of, well, we just have to learn to live with this, which that's interesting, but we'll let that go. I think Major League Baseball has sort of taken that approach. It's like, we're doing this. We're doing this. It's going to happen. You know, the ship is sailing, and here it goes. So what stops that ship? I think it could be, most likely, I think it's going to be one of two things. I think it's either going to be, like you said, one team simply being unable to compete. If one team gets an outbreak where, you know, of the 30 guys or whatever that are on the active roster, the 33 if you count the taxi squad or whatever, if say, you know, 12 of those dudes are suddenly having to be isolated and keep, even if they're asymptomatic, and keep having to stay isolated because they have positive tests and they can't field the team, that's going to be a huge problem. That's just the league not functioning anymore. The other thing could be if there's some sort of player revolt. You know, Chris Bryant yesterday, you know, talked about how his confidence is getting shaken. A lot of other players have spoken out about that. If you get a couple of huge stars that get sick. I mean, we already have Freddie Freeman with the Braves, who is not asymptomatic. He's sick. He's got fever. He's got body aches. It's hit him like a ton of bricks, his wife said. And then you get, say, a couple of guys on the Dodgers. Say you get Mike Trout. Say you get a couple other big stars. And all of a sudden, baseball players' confidence is shaken, and they're sending the message to their teams that they don't want to be doing this anymore, even if they do it quietly. I think that's the other scenario. And, you know, heaven forbid the third one. I don't even want to think about someone dying from this, but it's something that we have to think about.
We talk about high-risk individuals. We just got the news that veteran umpire Joe West is not opting out of the 2020 season, and he has some risk factors here. He's old, he's fat, he's also a terrible umpire, and I don't know if that necessarily makes you more susceptible to COVID or not. I don't know if they've actually tracked that, but I suggest that they do. And his comment has me scratching my head, because Joe West apparently is an epidemiologist, because he says, "I don't believe in my heart that all these deaths have been from the coronavirus." What the hell is he talking about? And does he really not understand his own risk?
Well, look, this would not be the first time that Joe West was mistaken about who is safe and who is not. We all know that, right? I mean, I think this is, on the one hand, I want to be like, look, I don't like Joe West as an umpire. I think he's bad. I think everybody believes that. His choice, The league has given him his choice. He can do what he wants to do, I guess. I think it's a bad one. But what really strikes me about what he had to say was, "I don't believe in my heart." That's what our whole nation is kind of operating on. We're sort of ignoring the experts, ignoring the epidemiologists, ignoring the doctors and public health officials. And just like, no, I feel okay about going to this bar. I feel fine with this. I think we're going to be okay. Maybe if I just show bravery that this virus is going to, you know, back down from me or something. It's Joe West is a singular person in baseball, but he is very much an American in every way that we have become as a country in the last several years. We just don't want to, so we won't. Or we just want to, so we will, despite the risks. It's kind of striking, but blown call by Joe West, not a shocker.
One thing we're also talking about is this trade deadline that's coming up. And if, in fact, baseball gets going, and if they can get as far as the end of August, there's actual meaningful baseball business to be conducted with somebody like Chris Bryant, who could be moved. You know, it doesn't really change the fact that there will be more normal seasons to come. There will be some sort of normalization of the game in whatever our new normal-ish is. What's the significance of this trade deadline, of how this is going to go down, and how teams could try to game this, to try to get the most out of an opportunity brought by pandemic?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've been trying to think about that. I tend not to have like the best strategic mind when it comes to transactions. But the first thing that I did think of, and I think everybody agrees, is the standard, we're going to dump a player, who's about to become a free agent as a rental. That kind of deal is either not going to happen or it's going to be a terrible deal. I, the one I keep thinking about is Francisco Lindor for the Indians, who in a normal season, I think he would be traded in, June or July for a prospect package or something. But if the playoff, run such as it is a couple of weeks, I don't know anybody's going to be giving up big prospects for a chance at a championship that most people are going to have a hard time knowing what they feel about it. So the big prospect package kind of deal doesn't seem likely, but at the same time, just picking up a guy or two because, hey, we got a chance in such a short season. The White Sox are a great example. I mean, everybody figured they'd be much better this year. But they could be a legit championship contender. Almost anybody who isn't just patently terrible could be. Do you add that piece this year instead of adding it next year when you might have? I think those are a lot of interesting questions you're going to spin around. I'm sure there is some hack to this that, Rick Hahn or Theo Epstein or whoever has thought about. But at the moment, I'm not sure what it is. We're just going to have all kinds of weird, like, baseball on the field decisions coming in July and August.
Yeah, and the problem with even the guys, even the quants who are running every algorithmic scenario here, they don't have the data. Like, even if there is a hack, it may be more of a rules hack than it is knowing, because you don't know how good you are. And that's really the problem, is that a team, when it's deciding, hey, we're in this or we're not in this, when it comes down to kind of the guts poker chip in your hand or not, how do you know? Because one week to the next, we could have just wild swings due to sheer randomization and variance.
Yeah, and it's funny when you spoke earlier about how on the one hand you're excited for baseball, on the other hand you're like absolutely horrified about this all going on. The excited for baseball part for me is almost less about watching the pitches and the hitting in the game, and more about thinking about what you just said. There is no blueprint for this. We have been part of what I think has been a drag in baseball for the last several years is the like-minded thinking of almost every front office. These guys all kind of come from the same mold. Everybody sort of adopts the same models. There's just this weird sameness that has crept into baseball. Now we've got the equivalent. Here's a great example, an analogy. It's like car racing, right? You know, when you put restrictor plates on NASCAR, whenever they did that, everybody said it got boring and you couldn't pass and there was no more, crazy strategy and risk involved. And this is like going to the short track after having to be at Daytona with the restrictor plates. All bets are off. You could do crazy stuff this year and someone's going to try crazy stuff this year. And I kind of want to see it happen.
Yeah, the homogenization hits at a lot of levels of baseball, and it's something that's bothered me for a long time, where I'm 51, and growing up watching baseball in the 70s and 80s, I'm not going to argue necessarily quality of player aesthetics, but differences. Guys had weird batting stances. Guys had weird pitching motions and things we could go on the driveway and impersonate and have fun with, and just strange swings and stances, and now everything's been optimized. Everything's been coached from such young ages that this is the right way to swing. This is the best way to maximize your velocity and decrease your time to the plate. That we don't have those little quirks anymore. And that's why when a golfer like Matthew Wolf shows up, everybody's like, oh my God, this is so exotic and different, because those joys are fewer and further between.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you had it on the team level where, there might be one team like Whitey Herzog's Cardinals that were all about stealing bases and slap hitting, and teams that were swing for the fences. Now you have everybody swings for the fence. But yeah, that individual player thing too. And the one that I think is going to come into play the most might not be an obvious one from, say, batting style or whatever, but just the fact that you don't have to pace yourself that much this year.
Right.
So much of what players do when you talk to them, they are always talking about the long grind, the stamina of the season, needing rest and stuff like that. And I think casual fans underestimate just how much that plays into the level and intensity of a player. If a pitcher can, start 7 games or 10 games or whatever he's going to start, rather than 29 or 30 games, that might completely change the way he pitches. And the same with a hitter and how many days off people get and whether they're going to dive for that ball and stuff. So we might see some weird stuff.
Yep, it's the game you can't play harder, and they're going to try to find ways perhaps to play it harder, and maybe we don't even know what those ways are yet.
It's either going to be, again, like everything else, amazing or horrible. We'll see.
Amazing or horrible. I like it. I think it's a good name for a podcast perhaps down the road. Craig Calcaterra, thank you as always for your time and intellect. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having me on.
That is Craig Calcaterra, the lead baseball writer for NBC Sports. And I don't know what the hell is going on with baseball, but we're talking about it. I've got a football question when we come back, and it has to do with the Patrick Mahomes contract and then what we immediately start doing in Chicago. And I got to just ask you, we'll talk about it. 312-644-6767. When can we stop? When is it okay that we can just acknowledge some very self-evident truths and get on with our lives as fans? We'll discuss next on The Score.
With the second pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears select Mitchell Trubisky.
Whoa!
Quarterback,
well,
North Carolina.
Hello. Mitchell Trubisky is going to Chicago. And he will mentor with Mike Glennon, and the young man with just 13 career starts at North Carolina is trading in the NC for the C on the side of his helmet. And the city that hoped that Jay Cutler could be the savior now will put their hopes into Mitchell Trubisky.
Their hopes would not be fulfilled. Sadly enough, that was NFL Network Rich Eisen on the night Mitchell Trubisky was drafted. I remember where I was. I was paying at the Jewel, and my phone, I was scrolling on Twitter. I went, wait, what happened? I missed, what, this? Huh? And then got the lowdown on the score and followed it all. But here we are, and let's talk about this and just kind of have this out. Every once in a while, this discussion occurs, and Patrick Mahomes, and I knew this was going to happen, he signs the massive $500 million contract extension, and, you know, debate what you want about all of it. But there's the headline. There's the story. This is after the Super Bowl victory and everything else. And then we immediately have to go to, what does this say now about how bad a draft pick that was, regardless of where Mitchell Trubisky ends up? All right. I'm tired of doing that. And it's not just because it sucks as a Bears fan to have to keep confronting the fact. When are we allowed to just say uncle about it? When are we allowed just to say, okay, yes, you're right, Ryan Pace screwed up. And if you want to debate whether or not now, this long after the fact, that should retroactively cost him his job, and you have someone else who you think can now do a better job and just punish him over and over and over again for getting that one wrong, it presumes that Mahomes would have been this great in a similar situation here in Chicago with all the other moving parts. There are a lot of presumptions there. But for whatever reason, yes, yes, the Bears picked wrong. As in the words of the knight in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, they chose poorly. And you can add Deshaun Watson in there, but here we go again with this. Every time something good happens elsewhere, we revisit this fact. Now, I don't think Trubisky is going to end up being a complete NFL bust. He's not Mike Glennon. I do think, as many smarter football people than I have surmised, that if and when this is over here and he goes to a team that runs more like, you know, old the Kevin Stefanski stuff or Kubiak, old Mike Shanahan stuff, that's got bootlegs and waggles and a moving pocket and allowing him to make a throw that he sees and throw it to a guy on the move, use his skills, that maybe he could be effective and lengthen his career for a while. And I think he'll be around the league for a while because those skills, those measurables, those traits are still there. He's really fast. He's got a real strong arm. And when he throws a pretty ball to the right guy and understands what defense is out there, things can look really good. He can take off and fake out a linebacker and add extra yards and go tumbling into the end zone every once in a while. I mean, that's all still there. But no, it didn't work here. And every time, it's like the self-flagellation that is involved with all this good Patrick Mahomes news. It's like, yes, we get it. It happened. They picked Mahomes. They chose correctly. Ryan Pace didn't. And he gave up a bunch of draft picks for the opportunity because he was so sure of it, because he sat down with him, because he liked the kid and he liked his family structure and everything about it. And it didn't work. And maybe the whole John Fox thing that started out was not the ideal way of working him in and jump shifting to Matt Nagy and the high expectations for a rookie head coach running the offense. Maybe that just wasn't right guy, right time. And there could be complicated reasons why it hasn't worked out. But 312-644-6767. Is it okay to kind of be done with it, to have that now assumed, to have all of that? They didn't pick up the fifth year option. We're further along in that narrative now that we can be removed from the lament, because other true busts. And I also think too that, at least on Twitter, I think Trubisky gets a bit of a raw deal where he's thrown in there as, it's like he's become Nickelback, or he's become a punching bag in a way that I think has gotten past what's really fair, past what's deserved. Yeah, he has not lived up to his status. He's not going to be the savior. He was not worth trading up to take second overall. But he's had his share of really strong games. He's had his share of great moments. He's not one of these complete quarterbacking turds. And we should know that. We should know the difference between Jonathan Quinn and Cade McNown and Chad Hutchinson and somebody like this. It's his pedigree hasn't matched his performance. He hasn't earned the draft status. And it's not like he's been a bad guy either. you know, he's tried to say the right things and do the right things, but he's, you know, like a national punchline punching bag. I don't know that that's necessarily deserved, and maybe somebody will unlock him and continue to get the most out of him. But I guess I'm just, I'm still weary from it, of trying to relitigate a bad draft pick and then having a really good draft pick after him that would have been better to have him here. And the 708 says, we still hear about Sam Bowie from time to time. Don't see this being any different. He was hurt. Those things, you talk, Sam Bowie had the bad feet. And Greg Oden, those guys were hurt. That was different. Those guys, there's nothing you can do about that. There's nothing you can do about Greg Oden. Greg Oden was a phenomenal college player. That guy was a man. You know, there were reasons why it wasn't insane to make that pick. Like, that's the difference, is that, you know, it's some guys were like hurt and bad and out of sight, out of mind. You know, the Bulls had their share of those. Scott May was, you know, an example of somebody like that who they thought was going to be better. But it's going to be, it's, we get two things going on with Trubisky. We have this overinflation of the desire to beat him up and just to drag him for not being Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it has to suck. If you're Mitchell Trubisky and you see this news, he knows. Like, he knows that all of a sudden he doesn't get his fifth year option picked up, and then they sign Mahomes to a $500 million extension coming off of the Super Bowl victory. His first thought is going to be like, oh, I don't want to get on Instagram. I don't want to get on Twitter, and people are going to be texting me. And he's probably trending just because then we all snap into action and we decide that that's going to be what we're going to do. That we kind of say, all right, now it's time to relitigate and to pound Ryan Pace all over again for getting it wrong. And meanwhile, the actual Mitchell Trubisky is going to get an opportunity right now, they say, to win the starting job and remain the starting quarterback of the Chicago Bears. He is very much right here. Like, he's still here. And yet it seems that we've decided that we've just sort of declared him this horrible bust from which they must move on. And now it's time for Nick Foles. And even if Nick Foles starts, Trubisky's going to play, because the other quarterback always plays. Obviously, if there's football, if they can do this somehow, whatever is going on. But, and yeah, not just Mahomes, Watson too. Saying that reflects on the Bears as well. Yeah, it's just, is it okay? I'm asking you. Can we decide to not have to do this every time? See, that could have been. And I admit, I've had my fun with it too. You know, after as we were getting ready for the Super Bowl and watching all this stuff, I wrote a Twilight Zone column and sort of deadpanned as if it were Patrick Mahomes on the Bears, just to twist the knife a little bit. I admit I've had my fun with it. You have to, because I think it's part of it. But then we can't have every Patrick Mahomes headline also function as a Mitchell Trubisky headline and a Ryan Pace has got to be fired. Well, maybe he does, and maybe he will be, and maybe somebody else will be in charge when everything's better. Or they've stanched the bleeding here by finding Nick Foles, and they can plug him into Matt Nagy's offense, and he can understand what the defense is in front of him, and everything will be fine. Maybe. If there's football, I don't know. Meanwhile, we've got a little bit of news developing in the NFL. I found this interesting. You may as well. This is from veteran Cowboys beat writer Clarence Hill Jr. This is in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. He writes, add nose tackle Dontari Poe to the list of free agent defensive line additions to call out Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones for his silence on racism in the 6 weeks since the death of George Floyd by a white Minneapolis police officer. Veteran defensive tackle Gerald McCoy, who signed a three-year deal with the Cowboys March 17th, wondered aloud about Jones's silence last month. And now Poe, who signed a two-year deal with the Cowboys on March 25th, shared his thoughts on a muzzled Jones with Bleacher Report. This is Dontari Poe. His silence definitely means a lot, because in any other situation, he'll have something to say about most things. I was once a proponent of doing stuff behind closed doors and doing what I do not out in the forefront. So hopefully he's doing that, but who knows what he's doing. Personally, I would hope he comes out and says, okay, I'm willing to help. I'm willing to fight, and I'm willing to be with y'all. And his sentiments echoed those of McCoy. This is what McCoy said. It's bigger than football. We need him, Jerry Jones, to speak up about life. This is about human beings and equal rights, and that's not what's happening. It would be great to hear him say something, anything. It doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. You can't be silent at a time like this. I'm new to the Cowboys organization. I'm blessed to be part of this organization. When things are not going well for the team, you can hear him screaming, this is life. This is bigger than just football, bigger than money, bigger than winning a Super Bowl. Something needs to be said. Because of his level of who he is and how many people listen to him, that's why I'm saying it. Everybody doesn't have to speak up. I'm not saying everybody has to say anything. If you want to be silent, that's fine. But the level of who he is, yeah, I think something needs to be said. So now Dontari Poe is saying the same thing, and Dontari Poe is saying that he will kneel during the national anthem despite an apparent team rule against it. So that bears watching, and it's been a while since I even considered that the fact that, you know, George McCaskey and the Bears came right out, and I thought got out around this in a very impressive and mature way, and the Cowboys really still have said absolutely nothing. So that is strong stuff from Dontari Poe. And look, when you're a just signed free agent, maybe he doesn't feel the same connection. Maybe he doesn't feel the same ingrained response or fear, perhaps, of retaliation. That's one thing we're learning, is there are a lot of athletes right now that don't care about some of that stuff and don't care about retaliation and recrimination. And that's great, because they don't have to, and they shouldn't, because they should feel empowered. We are going to talk with a general manager of a professional sports team in Jed Hoyer of the Chicago Cubs. He's going to join us at 11 o'clock. But first, we have the Midday Midway. I have a new tourist attraction that I'm going to hang the big I'm not interested sign on. It's a fascinating idea that may be compelling to some, and I think it's got disaster movie potential written all over it, so I'm going to say no on that one, even if I had the funds for it. This looks like a Jurassic Park type thing. And also, I saw Hamilton. I hadn't seen it and hadn't really tried to see it and didn't know much about it other than people thought it was great. And I will tell you what I thought of the movie. And the movie is actually a recorded version or versions of the actual Broadway play, that they recorded all of them and then put together apparently the best possible version of Hamilton to show as a movie. And it was quite an experience. That's coming your way in the Midday Midway next on The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
Here at the Midday Midway of our show, we review what we have already discussed and let off by talking about MLB's unconscionable testing issues right now. After telling the players they would be tested at a minimum of every other day, some have gone 5 or 6 days between tests and not getting results and not able to open camp, and the Cardinals had to delay their workout again this morning. MLB put out a self-congratulatory non-apology of a statement yesterday, touting how great the testing's been, and then while admitting that 4th of July kind of maybe sneaked up on them this time. And it's wrong. And it's wrong in a lot of ways, because if you're paying attention to what's happening in certain places in this country, namely Houston and large areas across Florida, Dallas, San Antonio, Phoenix, that we're seeing overwhelmed ICUs again. We're seeing ventilator capacity tested again. We're seeing testing capacity decline and timing stretched out again, and personal protective equipment rationed again. We're doing it to ourselves yet again because we're lazy and stupid and selfish. And if baseball is going to further stress the system, you have to start to wonder if they should, even if they can. Is it ethical for baseball to continue doing what they're doing if they're taking up testing capacity and testing space and testing resources that could go to others who aren't baseball players? And we also talked to Carrington Harrison and heard from Chris Bryant and talked to Craig Calcaterra and talked about Mitchell Trubisky, so there's all that as well. All right, I have to say that this is probably a no-go for me, but maybe you're into it. A company wants to use an advanced balloon to fly customers from the Earth's surface in Alaska to the highest reaches of the planet's atmosphere. Florida-based startup firm Space Perspective plans to use the Pacific Spaceport Complex in Kodiak to serve as one of the launch sites for the vehicle. It's called the Spaceship Neptune. The balloon rides will be manned by a flight crew, taking 8 passengers in a pressurized capsule suspended beneath a hydrogen balloon the size of a football stadium. First of all, I think at hydrogen balloon, I'm out. Because, you know, Hindenburg. Probably a little safer than that. Each passenger could pay an estimated $125,000 for a 6-hour journey. My point is, even if it's free, that's a no. Mark Lester is the CEO of Alaska Aerospace Corp. He says the high-altitude rides will be available from Kodiak in a few years and will support Alaska tourism. He says you will have people from around the world who want to come to Alaska and see the northern lights from the edge of space. The details here are fascinating, too. It says Alaska Aerospace and Space Perspective will test and refine spaceport operations and secure spaceflight licenses from the Federal Aviation Administration. Space Perspective plans to complete an unmanned test flight from the shuttle landing facility at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida next year. Passengers will begin with a 2-hour ascent to about 19 miles above Earth. They will then be able, this is critical, to post on social media about the experience or send data. Now, okay, so you're up there. You're 19 miles up in a hydrogen balloon in a pressurized capsule. So you think, then what? Well, Neptune then makes a 2-hour descent under the balloon and splashes down where a ship retrieves the passengers along with the capsule and the balloon. Capsule recovery would occur in the waters around Kodiak and the Aleutian Island chain, depending upon the seasonal wind patterns. Nope. No, thank you. I am officially not interested. The whole hydrogen balloon thing, go up and then, well, you know, there's a little wind out there, so we're not exactly sure where you're going to splash down, but we're pretty sure it's going to be near a ship. And no. Hamilton's been one of these things where I know I'm supposed to see it. I know I'm
Alexander Hamilton. My name is Alexander Hamilton, and there's a million things I haven't done, but just you wait, just you wait.
I did wait. I did, Lin-Manuel Miranda. I waited a long time, and we didn't go and see the play. We haven't seen any of the versions of it, but now there's no more excuses, because my wife wanted to watch it on Disney Plus, and she said, let's watch it as a family, and I morphed into my 15-year-old kid. I figured, like, I had this inertia built up, like, it's been long enough that I hadn't seen it, that, and I'm like, well, look, you love hip-hop, and you love history, why wouldn't you like it? Okay. It's awesome. It's absolutely stunning. It's phenomenal. But, you know, hold on a second here, though. So I did see it, and it is inarguably, absolutely, objectively, inarguably tremendous as an artistic achievement from the moment the first note is sounded and you're realizing what you're in for. I do suggest, by the way, I suggest watching it with closed captioning on. Otherwise, you might miss something, and you don't want to miss the wordplay. It's the way it's done, the internal rhyming, the jazz-like resolution, the tension and resolution of not knowing with which something is going to be rhymed, then they come all the way back to it, and it is so artfully done, and they do take some liberties with the actual history. My knowledge of the history was not completely filled in. I just had general ideas. I knew where Hamilton came from. I knew that he died in a duel with Aaron Burr, spoiler alert, and I understood that he was a Federalist who did a lot to set up our federal financial institutions and worked as Washington's right hand, etc., and knew a lot of that. But some of the stuff I didn't, and got and brushed up again on some of the actual history after the fact. But the performances are jaw dropping, remarkable, incredible, from the singing to the choreography, the stagecraft, the dancing, the costumes. It's all amazing. That said, it doesn't feel right for today. And I came away understanding that there was a couple of years ago, the world was a different place. And a couple of years ago, we are in a different place now, where on the one hand, yeah, it's great. It's great theater, and it's wonderful to stand the casting on its ear and to see people of color portraying Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Alexander Hamilton, to see how that is done in a way that makes a point. See the Schuyler sisters portrayed as they are. But it doesn't confront a lot of the truths in a way that we expect them to be confronted now. Because now we're toppling statues. Now we're forcing the names of teams to change because they're insulting and wrong. And now we're at a time where NASCAR isn't allowing the flag that celebrated the Confederacy, the Confederate battle flag, not allowed to fly anymore because it's not okay. And I came away from Hamilton as impressed as I am with it as a piece of art. It already feels somewhat anachronistic and somewhat timid, that even though there are direct references to the free labor afforded by slavery, that it's not, we know now, we know the Schuyler sisters, the Schuyler family was one of the prominent slave-owning families. That was one of the statues that was knocked down in upstate New York. Was Edward Schuyler, I think, the patriarch, the father of the famed Schuyler sisters, one of whom married Alexander Hamilton. And rather than dealing in stark truth, we're at a time now where people are marching in the streets with masks on and fists in the air. No justice, no peace, demanding change. And I come away from watching Hamilton on one level incredibly impressed. It's a great piece of musical theater. But as commentary, it's wrong. It just doesn't feel right now. It feels weak, and it feels timid, and it feels soft. And that's not the creator's fault, I don't think, because what was considered brash and risky and okay, what was considered, where places you could go and how you could do it, and what we now know, the kind of art and the kind of statement for which we have an appetite. And when we hear, when we hear athletes saying things, and we hear artists saying things, and we see so many artists coming out and saying, look, it's wrong of me to play a person of color. These jobs, these roles should go to someone of color. Or who most recently said she didn't want to play a trans woman, said an actual trans woman should play these roles. And all those questions are popping through my mind as well. So I was able to multitask, and I was able on the one hand to say, okay, let me enjoy this. And I did. And you will too. You will too, because it's just the quality of the performances is astonishing. Between the rhythm and the rhyming and the dancing and the wordplay that's going on, the complicated jazz-like relationships and the depth of thought of what's being said and trying to cleave as much as they can to actual history. But they don't really confront the fact that how are we remembering Alexander Hamilton when he was, you know, working alongside and in league with so many of these men who owned slaves? And even though there are references to it, it's not ignored completely. It just wasn't, it didn't quite, for me, it didn't quite feel enough of these times that are demanding more and demanding confrontation and trying to wrestle with our new reality and trying to drag so much of this country kicking and screaming into a more fair and more just future. It didn't have, as energetic, as incredibly energetic as it is, it didn't have that same essential energy that we see still now in the streets every day. And I guess that's what I kind of, that's how I felt. And that is the Midday Midway today. And already the texters are so angry. Can anything just be objectively entertaining? Why does every single sector of entertainment have to address social issues? I'm telling you how I felt and what Hamilton felt like it was then and what it kind of seems like it is now and how it's different now, because it's the same thing it was when it was 4 years ago when it arrived. The world has moved on. Things have changed and context changes, and that's how we view art. If you don't want to see Hamilton, you don't have to. And if you have a different opinion, you know what? That's okay, too. Coming up, we are going to have a conversation with the general manager of the Chicago Cubs. Jed Hoyer's team is back in action, and he's got some star players with some strong thoughts. And we'll talk to him about everything that is happening with the Cubs and baseball. I'm Dan Bernstein. Keep it here for Jed Hoyer on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.